Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome to downtown St. Louis for another edition of the Lumiere Place Final Table. I am Paul Harris alongside St. Louis's poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips. Tonight on the show, we're going to play for you an interview we did with Umberto Brenes, a fellow member of Team Poker Stars Pro, along with Dennis. Umberto is known as the Shark. He's the Costa Rican king of poker. Dennis has run into him many times at the LAPT on your adventures there earlier this year. Terrific guy, and we did an interview with him at the World Series of Poker this summer. We'll replay that for you. Also, the poker coach, Joe McGowan, will join us this hour to give us some more tips on tells you should watch for at the table. Also, we will take you back to the World Series this summer for a discussion that we had at the end of day two. Joe and Dennis and I were sitting in the suite one night, and Dennis just had to tell us about a hand he had played earlier that day. We'll share that with you a little bit later on. Let's mention some of the stuff you've got coming up. You're kind of in a lull period here in August, but once September kicks off the fall poker season, what are you going to be doing?
Oh, absolutely. There's always a little bit of a hiatus, shall we say, after the World Series of Poker for a month, month and a half, something like that, where everybody takes a deep breath, and then we get going again. Going to try to make a trip to London. That should be fun. The EPT, the European Poker Tour, the Poker Stars puts on. Mm-hmm. An awesome event over there on it. They also have a High Rollers that I played in last year.
Yeah.
A $40,000 entry into
it. How did you do in that last year?
I finished 10th.
10th.
Out of 86.
So you bubbled the final table?
The final table.
Yeah, well, that's
what
all right. That's a nice run considering it's against some pretty good pros.
Pretty good pros. My gosh, you sat down at this. There wasn't a name at the table or a face at the table you didn't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down against Chris Moneymaker and David Benjamin and, you know, the rest of them right down the line there. It was awesome. And it was great, great poker. I love that.
Okay.
Let me tell you, there were no, you know, easy marks at these tables.
All
guaranteed.
Right.
People are paying $40,000. They're going to know how to play, probably.
Now, does that event, the EPT London, does that happen before or after the World Series of Poker Europe?
WSOP is the first one. It happens from the 26th of September till about October 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And then the EPT for Poker Stars starts October 2nd through the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make it deep in the EPT, you will not be able to play the High Roller. Boy, that'd be a shame.
All right, so that's one event you have coming up this fall. What else?
Well, there's a number of different charities and things I have going, but I also have something else going on in Vegas. It's the WCUF, the World Championship of Fantasy Football, on that. This is, if you've ever played fantasy football online or anything, this is the premier event. This is the biggest one in the world. Last year, they awarded a check to a gentleman for $300,000 on ESPN down at the Super Bowl.
Wow.
You know, flew him out to the Super Bowl, took him to the game, gave him the check, the whole bit like that. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And if you want to get in on it, I have a special deal for you. Because they gave us, if you go on there to register for it, for their main event, it's $1,750 for a team. And if you just put in there the chip leader, you get $100 off.
Wow, a little promo code?
A little promo code right there on it.
Okay.
So any of you guys want to get in on that, go for it. He's giving me a little bit of a special deal. There will be 2,000 teams participating in this out in Vegas mm-hmm. on September 10th through the 12th. And there will be a number of celebrities there, too. Gary Payton's going to show up. John Sally's going to show up. It's going to be some fun.
All right, the website for that is WCOFF, WCOFF. World Championship of Fantasy Football. So WCOFF.com. Make sure you put in that promo code CHIPLEADER and save $100 on your main event entry. CHIPLEADER, of course, also the name of Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
Right.
That's where that all comes from. Okay, so that's coming up in September. And what else do you have?
Well, we have several charity golf events that I'm going to be participating in. The 14th is the Kelo Foundation. On that, we're still looking for a couple of teams there on it. A lot of fun, a nice auction afterwards on that one. The 22nd, we have the Basket of Hope. Again, I will be playing on that one. A gentleman from Chicago that I was playing online last night in the chat thing says, "Hey, Dennis, I want to bring a team down to play." And I said, No problem.
Great.
Gave him my website and everything. He's going to contact me. We've got another team going to come down here for that.
Basket of Hope is such a wonderful charity. Explain what that is for our listeners.
What this is, guys, it's totally one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. Andy Bennett, several of the other people that I know have been participating in it. Children that are, for lack of a better word, trapped in a hospital over, say, Christmas or Easter or something like that. These guys put together a basket of goodies and toys and that, and they go in there and they brighten this child's day. They spend time with him, they play with him, they give him the basket, they talk to the parents, give words of encouragement for that. So if you can imagine, if you're some six-year-old, some eight-year-old, whatever, and you're in the hospital for, unfortunately, a wide variety of things you can be there for, over Christmas. And then you see Andy Bennett walk in the door with a basket to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just great, guys.
That's terrific.
It is.
I've said before, and I'll say it again, anybody who does something to help out a sick kid is doing something noble.
Oh, absolutely.
It's one of the reasons I like that charity so much, Basket of Hope.
Yep.
Okay. And aren't you also going to be involved in a little online event that is starting up in just a week or two called the W Coupe? I mean, we talked about W Coff. That's the fantasy football one. The W Coupe is the World Championship of Online Poker.
It is the biggest and the baddest of all the events all year, anywhere you want to go. I'm telling you guys, if you want to play top-notch poker for some great rewards, go to this. And you can get on it if you go to PokerStars.net. For nothing. I'm telling you, you can work your way through this thing. It is unbelievable.
You earn, what, frequent player points, and you
Correct.
Can move your way up that way, and you
Yes.
get into free rolls and eventually work your way up to some of
Yep.
the top events online.
Step after step after step. And they are guaranteeing over $40 million in prizes.
Nice.
Yeah. I will be doing a lot of playing with these guys for a couple of weeks there.
All right. So when you're online, you can look for D.Phillips. That's your name.
That
online.
Is correct.
No, it's not Dennis Phillips, but D.Phillips.
Yep.
And, in fact, in the PokerStars software, which you can download for free at PokerStars.net, they have a thing called Find a Player. It's under one of the
yep.
Things you can click on at the top of the screen. And you can actually find out where Dennis is playing, and you can watch him play
For sure.
online a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on there and watch it, and then you can make jokes of how badly I play.
All right, so there are some upcoming events in the Dennis Phillips arsenal for the fall. We'll be back with more of the Lumiere Plays Final Table in just a moment. You're on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and the podcast on thechipleader.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance. This is the organization that helps out poker players all across the USA. They're fighting for you in the state legislatures. They're fighting for you in the courts. They're fighting for you in the capital of the United States. They are the ones who are encouraging other senators and congressmen to line up behind Bob Menendez and Barney Frank to pass legislation that makes poker legal in all its forms, online, offline, bar leagues, etc. It is being threatened all over the country for people who can't get to casinos or prefer to play in home games or wherever it is. Poker has been under attack in the last couple of years, and that's what the Poker Players Alliance fights against. They need your help. It costs just $20 to join. Go to theppa.org, theppa.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance. We're proud to have them as a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. Back right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
At the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are back here at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. Paul Harris with Joe the Poker Coach McGowan and Dennis Phillips. And we're sharing with you some of the stories from our trip this summer to Las Vegas for the World Series of Poker, where Joe and Dennis played in. How many events did you guys play? Do you have any idea?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I played in over 10. I think Joe played in over 10. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I played in under three.
Yeah, but you played a lot of cash games.
Yeah, I did play a lot of cash games. We wanted to share with you something that we recorded on the night after these guys had played day two. And, of course, they went on to day three in Joe's case and day six in your case, Dennis?
Keep going.
Seven? Eight?
Eight.
Day eight on his way to finishing 45th in the main event. But here's a discussion we had late one night in the Dennis Phillips Suite high atop the Rio in Las Vegas about a hand Dennis had played earlier that day.
I was sitting in the big blind, looked down to an ace-nine offsuit, had $1,000 on it. Gentleman that had been raising light all day, made it 2,600, was called by one of the better players at the table that also, though, had been was willing to play behind him.
When you say you had $1,000 on it, the blinds at this point were 500 and 1,000?
Correct.
With an ante of?
Of $100.
Okay.
So, nice amount out there and everything on it. Again, the other guy, smooth called the 2,600. I know that he was playing against the raiser. We were all kind of playing against him. He was raising every other hand, and somebody was playing against him on everyone. So I didn't put either one on a premium hand, but then I had ace-nine offsuit. I'm not exactly premium myself on that. So I put the other 1,600. I had easy pot odds by that time out there on it. So away we go. Flopped ace-9-4.
Beautiful.
With two hearts out there, but ace-9-4.
You flopped top two pair.
I flopped top two. I know the guy that made the initial bet was going to do a continuation. He had done it for 8 hours. Without doubt, he's going to put another bet out there. So I checked.
Trying to represent the ace.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he was going to. And he made, I think it was 4,200. All righty. Went to the other gentleman down there, the one who was going to steal it from him. I just happened to be in the pot is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I don't know how strong he's going to be, but he comes over the top for 10,200.
How many chips does he have?
At this time, he has a little over 100,000. I have about 130,000.
And the original raiser had, what'd you say?
He was probably around 70.
Okay.
All right. So I'm not actually too worried about the original raiser. We could see. He had tried to make a couple of bluffs in the day and all. The guy down there at the end, though. Now, again, I thought he was trying to steal from the original raiser. Same thing as I would do in his position. So I wasn't too worried about it, but there were two hearts out there. I mean, there's lots of possibilities. There's a lot of money in the pot now.
You're worried about a set of – you got to think, does he have a set of fours?
It's always possible.
You know, just in your mind, you're
saying,
geez, I hope he doesn't have a set of fours and I'm in big trouble.
Exactly.
It's unlikely he's got aces.
Right.
Because
– no, he doesn't have aces.
You've got an ace. It's unlikely he's got a set of nines because you've got a nine.
And he probably wouldn't have raised right there with a set of nines. Typically, you know, some people would to try to be deceptive. But
again,
I don't think he would have
particularly
raised
with a third person in
right.
there. You want to get
really
as many chips in the pot
raised.
As you can.
Well, not only that, but there's a big difference, in my opinion, between third set, second set, and first set on this. If he had third set with the two hearts, he might have made the raise there with the fours. I was a little worried about that exactly. In fact, when Lee Childs was behind him, that was one of the things I said I was worried about to him on it. But I really feel that I'm probably good by now. However, look at the money that's in the pot. He had just raised it at 10,200. The other guy had put another little over 4,000 in it. That's 14,000 right there. Pre-flop, we each had been putting 2,600 into the
that's
thing.
That's 7,800.
And then you've got the Andes too. So there's 22 to 23,000 in the pot right now.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. It's time for me to take this down. I honestly was figuring they both would run. I made it 25,000. The original raiser, the original bettor on the flop, couldn't get his cards in the muck quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he even had a pair, you know, whatever.
Right.
The other guy, and he didn't take too long, he had this winched look on his face like, ooh, damn. And he called me for another 15,000. Now, granted, with my money in there, that's a big pot. So he could have been calling light. He could have been calling with the two hearts. I wasn't for sure where he was at this time. All righty. River, or the turn card is a six on it. No heart. No heart or anything like that. I want to know where I'm at.
Yep.
And you like the six because
it's not
a scare card. You don't want to see a queen.
Exactly. Right. There you go.
All right. So you got a pot of 63,000, if my math is correct.
Somewhere in that area. Absolutely.
So what do you do on the turn?
I bet 15,000.
15,000 and it was 63,000 pot.
Yes.
And when the guy, going back a little bit, when the first guy that raised...
Mm-hmm.
The first cold caller was the guy that now you're playing the pot with. Is that
That's
right?
That's true. That is
so
true.
So he is likely to have
something.
Yes,
I mean,
he's likely to have an ace queen, possibly. I mean, typically, this is what you're hoping that he has.
I'm actually assuming he has ace queen, ace king.
That's
what I'm assuming. And I've got him
more
dominated.
More likely, probably like an ace queen.
Yeah.
Type thing. Normal spot.
So I'm feeling I'm in good shape and the hobby like that. He has 40,000 left at this stage.
And you've just bet 15 into a 63 pot.
Right.
What does he do?
What I'm doing then, I'm betting his hand or his pot, what he has in front of him, his chips, not the pot. See?
Now explain that. What do you mean?
Well, what it is, typically you got 63,000 out there. I'm supposed to make a substantially bigger raise.
Yeah.
But if
bet.
I do that.
Substantially bigger bet.
Or bet. I'm sorry, bet. But he only has a little over 40,000 left in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
So if I make the thing, I'm basically going all in.
If you bet 2/3 of the pot, that's putting him all in.
Absolutely. I think I have the better hand then. I don't want to drive him out of it. I want him to go all in.
Mm-hmm.
I bet 40% of his chips. For him to call that only, you know, a lot of people would end up just going ahead and shoving him in and be done with it.
And if he has a hand, you know, with two hearts and somehow now with the six, he's got some type of, like, gutter for a straight, maybe he would go over the top all in, thinking you might have fold equity if he's a bad player.
I mean, not
a lot of good players would make that play, but some of the reckless players might then say, oh, only bet 15. Maybe he's afraid. Maybe I can take it down right here, and I got outs if he calls.
Like if he's got 7-8 of hearts with a 6 and a 4
hearts,
out there.
Which really doesn't make much sense to me,
right.
You know, that he would have a 7-8 of hearts.
No.
But I'm just saying you give him a little room to maybe hang himself.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Went into the tank a little bit and just called me. So he put 40% of his remaining chips out there then on the turn.
Leaving him 25,000 with
Correct.
A pot of 93,000.
Correct.
Which is a little strange that, you know,
it is that
just call, because if he has a made hand, usually people would want to take it down there and protect what's in the pot and take it down, and they have 40,000 left, they're going to go with it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're drawing to the heart and you're betting on the come and you're drawing for the heart, he wants to make you pay.
Yep.
To draw out on him, and he wants to protect his hand and put it in right there on the turn.
Okay. Yep.
That's usually what people would do. So that's a little weird that he just calls.
Yeah, I agree.
What was your read at the time when you looked at him?
Oh, it was a cry call, absolutely. This guy didn't even want to throw the 15,000 in there. He didn't feel he could do it. I thought he was on a draw. I thought possibly the hearts, but I couldn't see the hearts on it hardly for playing it out there.
At this point, you can't think hearts
exactly.
to calls.
Exactly. So I'm trying to figure out what the heck he could have on it. And I really put him back again, ace, king, ace, queen type thing.
Makes sense.
On it.
But only 15,000, maybe he could have hearts. Because it's only 15, and now he cries calls. Because a lot of people like to gamble with a flush draw, two cards to come.
Let me ask you a question. Why can't he still have the fours that you're worried about? And he's just kind of acting it, giving a little Hollywood there, looking like he's making the cry call, and continuing to try to trap you to get more of your chips? Or do you think if he has a set of fours there, he shoves and figures you're going to call anyway?
If he has a set of fours, he should shove there. Absolutely should, I think.
Yeah, most players.
Because it's going to go in on the river anyway.
Most players would not, and the read doesn't add up to a set
it doesn't
of fours
at all.
From what Dennis is saying.
When he only called the 15, I in my own mind, I'd have been shocked like you wouldn't believe if he turned over fours. And I put the fours out.
Right.
Plus, you said he flinched when you raised the flop.
Yes. So,
okay.
I mean, I absolutely don't put him on.
I don't think he said flinched, but he said something funny.
Yeah. He reacted.
Yes.
He did not want me in the pot.
And this is an important thing that we talk about all the time amongst us, and I'm sure our listeners, when they are sitting around talking with their friends about hands that they've played, this is one of those things that you got to remember and you got to look out for and you got to pay attention to, even if you're not in the hand, watching how people react when other people do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect example of that. Okay, so we get to the river now. 93,000 in the pot.
Yeah. River comes, it's the jack of hearts. Puts three hearts out there and a face card.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Again, I can't put him on ace-jack. I can't put him doing that.
Why not?
Ace-queen, ace-king, maybe ace-jack. If it was me and that particular thing, I would have mucked it.
If the original better, that was the original raiser from pre-flop, he fires out there and you know an ace comes out,
yeah,
it's very likely he could have an ace.
Mm-hmm.
So now for that to get raised by him, the person you're now playing
right.
with, and then re-raised by you out of position in the blinds. Mm-hmm. I mean, ace-jack would be a horrible call, in my opinion, at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be tough to put him on ace-jack. I mean, he could, and players do some weird stuff out there. And still at this stage in the tournament, there's a lot of bad players left. You know, you have a lot of bad players that are left where they do some nutty things. I mean, I had a guy at my table didn't play one hand, not even a blind, for the last 4 hours.
Wow.
Not one hand, not even his blind, because everyone stole it.
Wow.
This is what's so funny, because Joe's exactly right. That's exactly what I was thinking. There's no way he plays this with ace-jack. Wait till you hear what he did play it with.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me just say.
So I was right, but I was wrong.
Hey.
But before you tell us what he had, okay. Let me just say right there, anytime I'm in a hand like that and I say there's no way he called with ace-jack, he called with ace-jack. Absolutely.
All right. Anyhow, on the river there, I checked. I mean, I had the aces and the nines. There was now three hearts out there. There was now a jack out there. He only had the 25,000 left. He was holding on to them for dear life down there. You know, I probably could have gotten a value bet out of him. You might even be able to get him to go all in. There's so much money in the pot. I didn't want to risk it. I played like a nit on the river, I'll admit. Lee Childs behind me, he said exactly what he would have done, you know, be done with it.
Okay.
So I checked. He instantly checked. Didn't want any part of it.
And at that point, you know you're good.
Oh, yeah. As soon as he checks, I'm guaranteeing I'm good
okay.
on that.
So if there was a chance he was on hearts, that chance evaporates.
Right.
And you turn over your ace-nine.
Ace-nine.
And we see his cards?
Yes.
Does he show his cards or
muck them? He showed his cards.
Okay.
Ace-six.
So he had an ace on
so
the flop.
So he called my 25,000 bet with wow. ace-six right. and then caught a six on the turn. That was punishment for the bad play.
That was his best card was his worst card.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. That's the one that cost him all those chips.
Yeah, and it was, and that shot me back up there now where I ended up today at about 190,000.
That's a discussion we had this summer at the Rio at the World Series of Poker in the Dennis Phillips Suite for the Lumiere Place Final Table. You're on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com. By the way, if you've got questions for future shows about hands that you've played or about other things poker-related, you can always email dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. This portion of the show brought to you by Reactor Watches.
Reactor Watches, that is the watch that I wear all the time. You need to go check out Reactor Watches, reactorwatches.com. That is the home of the best built sports watch, period. And I wouldn't say it if I couldn't back it up. Compare it. Compare this Reactor Watch or any of these Reactor Watches to any watch on the market, regardless of prices. Those watches are built to meet and in many cases exceed the Swiss standards. I'm telling you, this watch is awesome. And they back it up because if there ever is a problem with it, they will take care of it, guaranteed completely, and they'll have it back to you in most cases in 72 hours or less. Reactor Watches. Check it out, guys.
More of the Lumiere Place Final Table right after this on 590 The Fan KFNS and thechipleader.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 in Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Tuesday night is poker night on 590 The Fan KFNS. So let's go back live to Lumiere Place Casino Poker Room with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I'm going to share something with you. We did an interview with Umberto Brenes out at the Rio during the WSOP that was just awesome. Umberto has had over 50 caches in the WSOP. He's a fellow Team Poker Stars pro, and let me tell you, he is the ambassador from Latin America. This is an interview that Paul and Joe and I did during the World Series of Poker.
We know you're the shark. Which came first, the nickname or the card protector?
One people give me a gift for the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I never use this. And I say, okay. He said me, please use it. I go to use it. I never seen the chart. In the World Series, the 2006, I won a big hand in the last hand the first day. And when I won the hand, I put the chart and moved the chart. And Phil Hellmuth told me, Umberto, what do you say chart in Spanish? In this moment, you are very happy. As I say, Umberto. And the next day, all the people say, why you say chair in Spanish? Umberto. Entonces, this is the first time I never seen this.
I love it. I was lucky enough to play with you about three different times in Latin America in that LAPT down there, and you're a great host down there. Anytime I needed something, I knew I could come up and just ask you, and you'd take care of it. And that.
Thank you.
What do you see the future of poker? Is it expanding in Latin America? Is it really?
I think the poker in Latin America happened the same in the United States and in Europe. What happened in the United States? First, the internet side. Second, the TV. And third, money maker. Moneymaker is one guy, $20, and not play so good in this moment. It's strong, but not too much the game, and won. So in this moment, boom, they bomb the poker.
Mm-hmm.
When the poker go to Europe, the same. They put TV, the internet, and now how many people playing in Europe. Now it's time for Latin America. This year is first time, you know, Phil. Mm-hmm. This year, the three tournaments is with TV. More people go, more people see the poker in TV. So I think in the next 2-3 years, the poker explode in Latin America.
In your home country of Costa Rica, are young people, college students, and people in their 20s playing poker a lot?
A lot of. My two sons, I have two sons and one daughter. 20 year and 18 year is in the university. This year I make a tournament in the Universidad de Costa Rica. It's the best university in Costa Rica. It's a big tournament. And when I come back in July, I have a tournament in the second Universidad UNA in Costa Rica. And too many people play. When I go to this year to play the university, more than the 300 people in the school want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people. And in this moment, it's perfect, but you need a computer, you need a TV, internet. Entonces, it's the universities, the people play poker in this moment. Entonces, it's good because the poker is down to the university, to their...
To everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed when I was down there, and again, I do not speak or read Spanish, but I didn't actually have to. The response from the people down there, every paper down there in Argentina, the next morning, they'd slip one under my door. I'd look at it, and there'd be pictures about the poker events from the previous night on the front page of the paper down there in Argentina. It was just amazing. And when we went to the parties down there, we'd have the local politicians there trying to get up in front of the stage, and the local actresses, and... See, in the U.S., there's always a little bit of a reserve with poker players. There's, you know, some people, you know, well, the dark, smoke-filled rooms, you know, and the things like that. It seems like down there they'd accept you just wholeheartedly, like there's no reservations of any kind. Is that, you know, really Latin America? They accepted me great. I loved it. I mean, is that normal?
I think it's normal. What happened? Is with the poker happened the same 10 years ago in the United States, 20 years ago, when the first time I come to play poker here, too many people say poker is danger. I remember one time I go to play to New Orleans, mm-hmm. and the police come. And I have a very good luck, no go to the jail.
That's a bad beat. If you go play poker, you go to jail.
And now the poker is a star, really a big star the last year for Poker Star. And me, I never think I see this in poker, but the poker changed too much in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Latin America, have the same situation. I think now the people see the poker different. Too many people in the university play poker, and now the poker is not the you see in Hollywood. The big problem is Hollywood put the poker with girls drinking and
all that stuff. Yes.
Now I think the people change.
I have to ask you about the hand that knocked you out of the WSOP main event 2 years ago. I know poker players remember these things like yesterday, but for our listeners, let me remind them, it was you and Javad Khan where you had ace-king and he had pocket aces, and the board came out king-high, but he made an ace-high flush in spades when it was all over. When when you're playing against a guy like Javad Khan, and in 2007, Javad was a wild man, and you've got a reputation at the table for taunting your opponents a little bit as well. When the two of you are there together and you end up playing heads up, is there any kind of problem with the other guy being more aggressive? I mean verbally and physically, not as a poker player in the cards and the betting, but the way he was acting that year and the way you were acting, was that a problem at all for either of you?
No, I never had a problem with the play poker. Poker is a game. I play poker for a hobby. I never play poker for need money. I am engineer. I have a company in Costa Rica. When coming here, is I go to play with. I not try come to Vegas to want money. I try to go to competition. Mm-hmm. The first time I come here, I see Doyle Brunson. I go, what Saturday is Doyle Brunson? I hear, I play here. I want to play with Johnny Chang. No, entonces, yeah. I like with I play with the big guys. No, not try to Vegas to play for the bad player.
Mm-hmm.
Entonces, all time for me, the poker is a competition. No, I don't have problem personally. I like play with the big. I don't like play with the people cry too much.
When you do,
but I like play with the big one.
When you do play with the Doyle Brunsons and the Johnny Chans, say you play in a $25,000 event or a $40,000 event, mm-hmm. is your strategy quite a bit different because you know you're playing with the best of the best, as opposed to playing maybe in a $2,000 event with 2,000 unknown players that might be more unpredictable and wild? Do you have a different mindset going in to the bigger events with the better players as opposed to the smaller events with the less known, you know, more amateur type players?
Really, I prefer play with the best guy, the big one, but I play better. Today, when I play a very bad hand, I am in the little blind and I play a queen four of suitor. But it's say only put $50 more, six people
yeah.
in the pot.
Right.
I say, okay, it's only 2,000 yeah. tournament, and the flop come queen, 4-6, two clubs. I check, one card bet, I raise, he called me, another card bet,
yeah.
clubs coming and lose. 80% of my money in one hand.
Mm-hmm.
If I play with a big guys, I don't play queen four.
So
I play better.
There you go.
The same yeah, situation.
That's right.
This is
that's exactly right.
Same situation, same structure where you close the betting if you were in the big blind. I think you said small blind. And it's only one more chip perhaps to complete. With the better players, you would fold that hand.
I fold this hand.
You would fold that hand.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But the reason is... when the big guys, I prefer play a little hands but too strong. If you play today, I play too many hands. So the people, when you play too many hands, you don't have respect for you.
Mm-hmm.
When you have you not play for 2 hours or 3 hours with the big guys, you don't play one hand, the big guys say, Humberto only played two aces, two kings. Okay. When you happen 2-3 hours, not play one hand, sometimes I play, but I play 5-6, 6-7, and the people say, Humberto no play one hand, now it's a big hand. But in this moment, I think it's only 2,000, I don't have problem, I am the big guy, the big guy, bam, out in 2 hours. Stupid today.
But here's the other question about, the other side of that question. Let's say you did play queen four against a table full of pros, and you're in the small blind, and there's that flop of queen 6-4, you've hit two pair, you bet out. There are they going to call you?
I think the people need call. There people have 6-9, the clubs. They have a pair of sixes for clubs. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I take the problems. I take the problem when I pay with queen four.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is coming.
I think it works the other way too. If you're playing, because I've been in similar situations, I'm playing with Humberto. And I may flop first and third pair, but when he comes back at me or even smooth calls me, I have enough respect for his game, I'm going to slow down. I'm going to try not to. Now, if it's somebody sitting across there that I don't know, might be putting a move on me or whatever, I'm much more likely to put extra chips in like you just did. Now, again, if you were playing against Phil Hellmuth, and he smooth called you or made your raise back at you, you're going to suddenly go, my two pair may not be good. I mean, I may want to slow down. Same thing there. If I'm playing against you and I've got two pair and you raise me, I'm going to do some serious thinking before I put any more chips out there.
It's interesting you said the other opponent had 6-9. I'm assuming they were in the big blind.
The people called the 6-9 is in the bottom.
On the bottom.
I got knocked out of the tournament, the 1500 on the six man. A guy called me on the button with a 7-4 of clubs against my king jack, and I flopped top two. I flopped a king jack, and I bet every street. And he caught a flush on the river. He just kept smooth calling.
Runner flush.
24 to
he only flopped one club. And he had two on it. He got two more clubs turned in the river. It's horrible.
What goes through your head? You've played so many tournaments. I mean, for years and years and years, and you've cashed so many times. What's going through your head when you walk out of that tournament room after that hand, the queen four hand that you're talking about? Are you cursing the other player? Are you cursing yourself? Or can you quickly say, you know what, that's over. I'll play another one soon.
In this moment, I know the problem is me. I know, can say the other players, you need to play this. I know my design defense can say, you're stupid, why you play this hand?
Mm-hmm.
The people is the people. Mm-hmm. But I can change. No, I know can change the other people.
Good point, very good point.
I play bad. I take problems when play with Queen 4. It's good for me to go to the room. I say today is a good lesson for tomorrow or for the other tournaments. Remember, I called to my house. I talked to my son. And my son said, Papa, what are you doing? You finish in the last three tournaments in the last 2-3 hours. Entonces, I told the hand, I said, why you play Queen 4? Okay. My son, you have reason. Why do I play Queen 4? Yesterday, I play my last hand is I am in the bottom. I make a little raise. I have two queens. The big blind raised me. And he put the 30% of the money in the pot. I move all in. He called me an ace queen. I have two queens. I am happy. He's coming. And so I go to the room. So now I try. You not can do that. It's,
right.
You need to learn in this game. You need discipline, patience. You know, can push too much. But the people play 6-9. Yeah. What can I do? He plays 6-9. Why I play queen 4?
Mm-hmm. I find it so interesting that the better the player, and you're certainly one of the best, you feel like you played that hand bad and you're mad at yourself. Most players down in the Amazon room right now, they play that queen 4. They leave. They get on their cell phone. They call whoever it is. I just got so unlucky. I can't believe how bad I run.
What a bad beat.
I'm so unlucky. This is a little maybe of my problem. So I kind of think. But the great players, they analyze the hand and say, you know what? I shouldn't have played that hand. And they're honest with themselves. And I think that's how you can actually better yourself as opposed to thinking, I just keep getting unlucky or the cards aren't working for me. And I think that's one of the many reasons, but it's interesting that you feel that way. And I think that's something a lot of our listeners can pick up on and really truly try to be honest with themselves after a cash game session or a tournament or whatever they're playing in to try to improve. You always want to become better. So I think that's a great quality that you have. That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's very interesting about yesterday night, my friend, Marco Chinchilla, he worked with me in my company, go to play the tournament tonight, 200. Yeah, 200. I say, no, come back before the fourth. The fourth is in the morning last time. He come back in the room, too. So I say, no good. I say, what happened? He say, one guy raised and I called with a jack. So I say, how many money you have? I say, okay, I have something. Okay, you play bad. You have a jack. You have two different things. If you think this, you have a best hand, you need move. But it's a bit too much money in the pot. It's the tournament is for four hours. Okay, you need move all in, or you fold the hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he have a jack. Entonces, when he come back to the room today and I'm out, I say, I told you yesterday you played bad with a jack. I played today queen four. I give my reason. I say I lose a little money with queen four. I need two pair or trips for I lose money with queen four. But,
right. Well, Umberto, we really appreciate you coming up and joining us here on the show. It's a pleasure. We have a lot of respect for your play at the table. We hope never to see the shark moving towards us if we're at the table with you. And good luck with the rest of your series.
Thank you. I promise tomorrow play good. I know told too much. I play king, queen four. Okay.
Okay.
I told when I won the next tournament. Okay.
So if I'm at a table with you and I see a flop of queen 4-4, I know you don't have it.
I promise. No,
might be pocket queens.
Possible two queens.
And that, folks, was Umberto Brenes as recorded in this summer at the WSOP. High above the Rio, as Paul is so fond of saying.
Yeah.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel.
Yeah, One Time Apparel is run by our poker-playing friend Kevin Steffen, who just spent 3 weeks down in Tunica at the World Poker Open. He's got shirts, he's got caps, he's got all sorts of apparel for you that you can find on his website, onetimeapparel.com. He's got stuff for the men and for the ladies. And, in fact, for the ladies, I would suggest one of the ringer T-shirts or one of the scoop neck T-shirts, or maybe buy the lady in your life one of the pink camo hats that says One Time. Kevin started the business this summer and debuted it at Poker Palooza at the 2009 World Series of Poker, and so many people came up to his booth and said, I say that all the time. Every time I'm playing poker, at least one time in a session, come on, one time, let me hit this. Sometimes you want to say, come on, one time, don't let him hit this. You don't want that guy to draw out on me. One time, let my hand hold up. That's the concept behind One Time Apparel. Kevin put this together not just as a moneymaker for him, but also to raise some money for charity. A portion of the proceeds does go to various charity organizations, and he supports the American economy by using local vendors and suppliers and manufacturers as well. Go to the website, onetimeapparel.com. You can charge it to your credit card. You can use PayPal. You can get all the stuff you need to wear around the poker table from that one website, onetimeapparel.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Back here in downtown St. Louis, Paul with Dennis and Joe, the poker coach McGowan, joining us now. Joe, back in the spring, before we all went out to Vegas for the World Series of Poker, you did a couple of weeks where you shared some tips on tells for our listeners, for both beginners and advanced people who wanted to learn a little bit more about what to look for in other players at the table. And we've actually had quite a few emails that have kind of piled up in the inbox at DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com from people who wanted to hear more of those from you as the poker coach. So tonight, can you share with us some more poker coach tells?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to, Paul. You know, one of the ones I can think of here quickly off the top of my head would be when you're playing in a game and there's a good player, typically a good player, that maybe hasn't quite been paying attention because there's a baseball game on, or, you know, they're having some lunch, or they're just distracted for whatever reason. You know, it's been limped and maybe called, or maybe it's even been raised and then called, and now it gets to this guy who's been subtly distracted, and he glances down at his cards, and boom, he raises. 99.9% of the time, that is not a bluff. That is not a spot for you to try to repop it and steal it. That is a spot where this guy has a hand. And one of the keys to it is because he's a good player. A good player would want to look at the situation, analyze the situation, say, okay, this person raised from under the gun. This person called. I see that the raiser's been raising a lot from under the gun with 6-7 suited, trying to steal from under the gun. He gets flat called by this other player I don't have a lot of respect for. He doesn't have a lot of chips. I see the player in the big blind to my left. They're getting ready to fold. They're not interested. You know, they've already given up on the pot. Here's a spot I can steal, and I'm going to make it, you know, 600 or whatever the bet's going to be to steal the pot. That's not the case. The case is they weren't even paying attention. They really didn't even see the raise. They were distracted. They were watching the ball game. They were looking at the waitress. They were ordering food, whatever it was. They looked down at their cards. It's because of the cards. It's because it's two kings. So it's a raise. It's a huge, huge hand. So that is a definite good tell that you're not going to see a lot, but you're probably going to see it maybe, if you're paying attention, you'll probably see it once a session, maybe once every two sessions. But it's a really, really good tell, and it's definitely, you know, one of my favorites that I see. You know, when you're paying attention, you will see it, and you will get to use it, and you can stay out of the way. You know, so if you're paying attention, that's a good one right there.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I actually think you see it a little more often than that because I expanded just a little bit. When a guy's talking on the phone, and then he says to the person, "Hey, wait just a second," sets his phone down to look at his two cards. Okay, he's probably not going to bet with a deuce seven there. Mm-hmm. When he has somebody on hold on the phone.
Yeah.
If they're in the middle of eating, you know, be it French fries or whatever they're eating at the table, you know, he takes a bite, he looks at his cards, you know, mucks them and goes back to eating most of the time.
But if he raises, that's not a situational thing where he's trying to, as you said, Joe, figure out where everybody is and now I'm going to make a play. That's not a situational thing. That's cards.
Exactly.
Correct.
Exactly. So
exactly.
The way you explained it is just absolutely perfect on that. If he turns around and throws chips out there, he's got a hand of some sort. If he's going to let his cheeseburger get cold.
Right. So, and Dennis, you bring up a great point, which is a very similar tell, without a doubt, when people are eating, which is more often. So it's in the same neighborhood, without a doubt. When somebody's eating, and all of a sudden, you know, they have a cheeseburger and their hands are full and they're eating the French fries, having a sip, and they have to put it all down, wipe their hands, and all of a sudden now they're going to play a pot. Most people will throw away all the marginal hands and, without a doubt, the bad hands. You know, most people. Now, Paul, you've mentioned in the past, well, could you do a reverse tell? Could you be eating a big sandwich and have your mouth full and all of a sudden raise and steal? Of course you could. That fits into the fun of the poker, you know. But then you kind of have to see who's who and how it works and if you can pick off some of these, you know, bluffs and reverse tells, and that's even the next step.
I got another one for you that I can add to that, which is, okay, as Dennis mentioned, about the telephone, you know, putting it down or whatever it is. How about this telephone tell, where a player two or three seats to your left has his phone out in front of him and it starts ringing and he doesn't pick it up before it's his turn to act? If you're in a position before him and you've got maybe middle pair and it's been limp to you and you're thinking of making a move there, or you're thinking of coming into the pot for a raise that somebody else has made, and this guy is not picking up his phone but is intently looking at the action of what's going on, he's not picking up the phone because he wants to play a big pot there, and he's probably got a big hand in front of him. So that is something you have to take into account about what you're going to do in that situation. Doesn't mean you automatically fold, but it certainly means you got to be careful if you're considering calling or raising.
Oh, absolutely.
I think another one, too, guys, to kind of go hand-in-hand with these, and we could probably talk a whole show about these with all the different variations, the different tells that come up in this neighborhood with these types of things, would be, when a player is having a conversation, it might be with the waitress, it might be with the player to the left, it might be with the dealer, and they're joking around and they're having fun in this conversation, and all of a sudden it gets to them, and they look down at two aces. They don't want to make it obvious. They want to totally concentrate now on the pot in hand, but they try to carry on the conversation. They try to make it like they're still having fun and they're still joking around and nothing going on here, but I'm just going to raise a little bit, you know, but I'm still having fun. I'm still talking with my friends and everything's normal. Don't pay any attention to me. But you can see the inner turmoil that they're having, that they really want to pay attention to the pot. So they're kind of half-heartedly paying attention to the conversation and keep it going. So if you can recognize that, that is also typically a great tell and a very, very big hand.
That's really good, because a lot of people miss those sort of things because they're not paying attention to the other players. Either they're just playing their cards or they are watching what people are doing with their chips, but not what they're doing before they even reach for their chips. So that's great stuff. Okay, give us another tell.
Sure. I think it was probably a month ago or so, I gave one, and I think it was even your brother-in-law ran into us, Paul, and mentioned to me, "Oh, just me and you? I'll check it to you," kind of poking with me and having fun, but he said how he liked that tell that I gave in the past.
Yeah.
This one's similar to that. You know, where someone's a little bit weak and they really don't want you to bet, and it's another phrase, and you'll see this one probably again maybe once a night, give or take. You're in a pot. Let's say you raise and you're the raiser and someone else decides to just smooth call and they have queens. Okay, for whatever reason they smooth call, who cares? But that's what they have. The flop comes king high. You do a continuation bet. You may or may not have a king. You may have pocket kings. You may have nothing. But the other person now is afraid of the king. But they may not believe that you have a king. So a lot of times that person will say something like, be careful, and they'll say it in that tone. As you're getting your bet, as you're getting your bet ready, as you're getting your continuation bet ready, you're stacking them out, that's when the person will say it. They'll say, be careful. They're trying to tell you, don't bet too much. I want to call you. I have a hand. But they're never going to say that if they have three kings or if they flopped a set of sevens or whatever the board is. They're never, ever, ever going to say that. But they will say it if they have a draw and they want to call, but they don't want to call too big of a bet. They have a flush draw. They have a straight draw. Or they have queens, but they're afraid of the king and not sure if they believe you. So they want to call a little bet and see what you do on the turn. So that's one you have to use cautiously of how you play it, where you really have to decide, how much do I need to bet here? How much do I want to bet? How vulnerable is my hand to the texture of the flop, and how many people are in the hand? You know, even with this one player that I now read as has something but a little weak and doesn't really want me to bet. So are you real vulnerable and you need to make a pot-size bet to make them pay to draw out on you? Or do you think that they just have a two-outer and you want to gamble a little bit and maybe bet it small and kind of string them along? So that's another good one.
Yep, that is a great one.
I think absolutely is. Except you're giving away all of my strategy, Joe. Thanks a lot. Great.
Well, I'm trying to do it in small doses here and there just a little bit. Keep our listeners happy and keep them coming back.
You know, that is such a great one because I hear that all the time. And I rarely will talk in a hand when I'm playing against somebody, particularly if I'm playing heads up. But when somebody says, when I act first and they say, be careful, I take my chips, I stack them very neatly, and I say, I'm betting as carefully as I can. just to give them a little closer of an idea. I understand what you're saying, and now I'm putting my money out here. Figure out what you want to do now.
I like to try it. And let them think they've changed what I'm going to bet. It doesn't, obviously.
Right.
But, you know. Oh, wait. Oh, really? Careful? Oh, wait a minute. Let me think for a second here.
That's a very good one. Okay. Give us one more, Joe.
Okay. Oh, give one more? Sure. Well, this one, I don't know if I'd put it in the tells department, although I guess it certainly could be. When a player folds their cards, I've seen world-class, top-notch players fold this way. It's a horrible habit. This would go back even to, like, my golf pro days when I used to teach golf, and you're giving somebody the fundamentals. You're telling them how to grip the club. You tell them how to set up. Believe it or not, folding properly is really important because it gives away the hand and gives other people information. When you tend to fold from the front of the cards towards the middle of the table, when you pick up the cards coming with your hands from the middle of the table, if you can picture that, you peel them up so that you'd expose maybe about an inch of the front of the card to the rest of the table. If you're in seat 3 and someone's on the other side in seat 7 or 8, and you can see them peel those cards up, you can easily see, without a doubt, if there's paint. You can easily see, without a doubt, you know, if it's a no spot or an ace, deuce, or a 3. Most of the time, I can tell, oh, that was a 9 of diamonds. You know, or many times, I've played in tournaments, many times over with top-notch players, they raise under the gun. Nobody calls him. When they fold, I say, oh, my goodness, he just raised under the gun with 6-8 suited. 10 minutes later, he raised under the gun again with 4-5 of hearts. You know, okay, he's stealing from under the gun. I'm getting this information for free. Now, ethically, you know, should I say anything? For years, honestly, I would tell people as much as, you know, I'm sitting next to you, you're kind of using your chips to protect your cards, or you're not protecting your cards properly. I don't want to embarrass them. I try to say it quietly, but hey, I can see your cards when you fold. You know, please, I don't want to see your cards. I don't even really want the distraction. Or, just like I just said, when they're folding their cards, but they're not folding them from the backside closest to them and picking them up from there, so there's no way anybody can see what they're folding. Plus, you know, there's a 9 gone or there's an ace exposed. You know, you have that extra information. I would tell them for the first couple of years. And what would happen to me, though, which is crazy, people would get mad at me. Oh, you can't see my cards. Oh, you know, you can't see my cards. And I'd be like, you know, okay, I give up. You know, all right, I can't see. So now I just really don't say anything. And to be honest, I may struggle a little bit with it, but I've just kind of given up on it. I've had too many of the poker players get mad at me and argue with me that either I can't see them or I didn't know what I'm talking about. So make sure when you do fold, this one may seem small because you may feel, well, I'm out of the pot, who cares? But anytime you give another player an advantage at the table, it's pretty big, and you really should make sure. I'd say it's probably 20% of poker players it's that high, you know, really fold, yes, where other players can see their cards.
Have you seen that too, Dennis?
I've seen it. I've seen another example of it. The guys that love the high toss on their fold, they take the cards and they flip them up, make them spin, look so pretty and everything like that.
Yeah.
And if you're slouched down at all, you can see guaranteed one of the two cards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they may start flopping them, you know, 6 inches, and by the time you're an hour into it, they're 18, 2 foot off the table. They're throwing their cards in.
Yep.
Yeah, but it looks
exactly.
good. But it looks good.
Oh, it
but
does.
It looks good.
It's nice. Oh, yeah. It's well done.
Now, Dennis, I don't know if you'll remember this, but we used to have a guy named Lou, an older guy who used to play in our games here, the regular game that you and I used to play in. And he would say to players from across the table, "You folded a pair of fours." And the, you know, the person would act like, "No, I didn't fold a pair of fours." But if Lou said it, that person folded a pair of fours because he always watched the folds, and it took me a couple of months to figure out, how does he know what these people have? Is he getting fantastic tells on them? No, he's reading their folds. He wouldn't do it all the time, but maybe once an hour or so he'd see somebody do it like that, and he wasn't in the hand, and even if it was somebody who had scooped the pot, it would be exactly what you were just saying there, Joe.
Yeah.
So there are players who...
That's important you said that, Paul. I like that you said that because some players may say, well, what does it matter? I'm folding. Who cares? I'm out of the pot. I don't care what happens.
Oh,
well,
give me a break.
If I know that you're folding a pair of fours in whatever that situation is, it helps limit, you know, the range of hands that you're going to have later when I'm going to pot versus you. Some people won't call a small pocket pairs, you know, pre-flop. Other people are going to call small pocket pairs if they feel they're getting the right price relative to the two stack sizes. Other people just still throw them away almost no matter what. That's really important, valuable information. You know, other people will call with weak aces with almost anything, any situation.
Yep.
Other players will fold almost every situation with a weak ace. So, you know, you don't want to give that information away from your opponents. And as silly, as funny as it may sound, be very, very careful how you do fold your cards. Don't let anybody see anything.
Great tips from the poker coach.
Don't forget our podcasts are available on thechipleader.com.
I'm Paul Harris for Dennis Phillips and Joe McGowan, the poker coach. We'll see you next week at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Join it, folks, because you will have a ton of fun. You can play 24/7 there, any kind of game, any kind of level. It's great. If you go online, I guarantee there are tens of thousands of people playing there with you. It's a great place to learn, great place to perfect, great place to have fun. Go to PokerStars.net and find the PokerStar in you.